We know that you will love this podcast. So shut your mouth and listen to Canadian Bushcraft.
Hello, Dragonfly Nation. This is the Canadian Bushcraft Podcast with your host, Caleb Musgrave, and Ryan the Adventure Guy Moffat. This is episode 124 of the podcast. 124 episodes now. Dear God, help us. This is the Bushcraft Christmas Gift Guide for Beginners. So this is an episode all about if you're looking for something to buy for someone who is getting into bushcraft. So stay tuned. All right. So this is episode 124. This episode is all about bushcraft related gifts for newcomers to bushcraft. If you got a friend or a kid, a nibbling, a child of your own, whatever, or an adult who just got into it recently, someone that's in their 30s and their 40s and their 50s, maybe who's a retiree and they're trying to get it more into the outdoors. Holiday seasons are upon us, regardless of what faith you practice. This is the holiday season for many cultures, and this is the time of gift giving for many cultures. So Rye has put together a really good list. I'm going to be kind of the color commentator for this episode of ideas for things to buy someone who's just getting into bushcraft. And with that being said, Ryan, it's over to you.
Yeah, we've got a lot of questions over the past month about what to get someone's kid for Christmas. Not even Christmas in general, but we thought perfect time sort of thing. My teenager, I think I'm ready to get him his first knife. Or want to get my daughter an axe or a hatchet or something. And yeah, I figure this is a good place to start.
Totally.
Since we're fielding these questions all the time for people. So giving them a nice, concise list of items to buy and ones that particularly won't break the bank either.
Yeah.
Some nice beaters on this list for people to find themselves, discover what they like, what they don't like. Just a nice starting point where they're not getting the nice $200 hatchet that they overswing and smash the handle on the first try.
Or bash it off a rock and shatter the edge.
Exactly. Yeah. And then it's just tears from there on. This is something nice where they can learn to respect the tool, learn to use the tool properly, and something they can build off for when they're ready to kind of upgrade to the higher price point items. As we all know, bushcraft is a money pit.
Yes. So it has become a very big business in commercial products.
Yeah.
Very much so, to the point that you go on wish.com or you go to Amazon, just type the word bushcraft and there's 10,000 things with the word bushcraft just jammed in there now as a catchphrase.
Yeah. And it's better to start off small and work your way up. I know there's the feeling there when you're getting into something new, you want the best. Sometimes it's a buy once, cry once situation, but for someone just getting into the game, they might not necessarily have the know-how where to buy, what to buy. They're just going to go on the first list that they find. What are the best of each? And then they get it. They either don't like it, it wasn't exactly what they needed. So down the line, they can then invest in a carpenter's axe, in a felling axe, in a splitting maul, and all that. So
it quickly becomes that problem that you say buy once, cry once. I agree with you where it comes down to buy once, cry once with experience.
Yeah.
If you don't know what you really need, you end up paying $300 on a custom knife that you don't know how to use.
That's what I mean,
Or you're so worried with how expensive it is, now it becomes a safe queen and you just keep it in the box.
Or else people get it just because it does have a high price point and it could be just some cheaply manufactured thing that's based off the name.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's, you might not have the bush smarts yet to really understand, okay, this is what I actually need instead. Maybe the $100 item's better than the $300 item.
Yeah.
And then just even something as cheap as a Mora knife is a great starter point.
Totally. And that's, it gives you a chance to build up your skills and know how to use those better tools. Yeah. Well, better in a sense. I personally still say that a Mora knife is one of the best knives you can own.
Yeah.
But if you go, okay, I like this knife, but now I know what I need to be better or to do what I want to do in the woods. Maybe this is not the knife for me. I need this style knife. Now I know. This is a chance to, again, this is for beginners. This is to help you get in there. And this guide is going to be fairly similar to one of our very first episodes of the podcast, but this is more related to youth. This is more related to people that are just getting started, for you to buy for them. Because let's be honest, as people who are experienced in bushcraft, I'd rather get a gift card or socks, wool socks, because I know what I want. You look at like the Gransfer's line of axes, I'd mentioned this to you earlier. I would hate to have a friend be like, oh, Caleb wants a Gransfer's axe for Christmas. I'm going to get him. Oh, well, that's in my price point. I'm going to get him this tiny little hatchet. And then I'm like, cool, I wanted a felling axe.
Yeah.
That's what I was looking for. I've got plenty of hatchets. And that just becomes those awkward, like, gift-giving moments where you're like, oh, it's not really what I wanted.
You get a lot of broken telephone when you ask for specific products like that, like you said.
Exactly.
You might get the wrong one. You ask for the specific model, but then they're like, I couldn't find that, so I got you this one. Is this the same thing sort of thing? And then, yeah, you kind of got to... You're grateful for the gift, but at the same time, it's like, you're already asking for the gift receipt to, to exchange it.
Yeah, it's always an awkward moment. This episode, I feel like, was really inspired by back in the Sugar Bush when we had one of our friends, Stephanie, come up with her youth. One of her young men started playing with axes while we were there, and he was trying them out and seeing what they were like. And then she started asking, what should I get him? Is that the kind of axe that what Caleb has? That should I get him? Like one, like what he made me and got for me. And you were like, you should just get that one. I'm not going to say exactly which one because you're going to be talking about them.
This one's on the list.
Exactly.
One of the top three. So.
This is the one to get him because he's young. He's just getting into it. He's not going to easily break it. If he does, it didn't break the bank. And that was a great piece of advice he gave to her. And I felt like that was really what kind of helped inspire this episode.
And you're not really going to be, especially if you're going for a child, you're not going to be looking for something for advanced techniques yet. You're not going to want to get him a prime carving axe.
Shout out to Kalthoff Axes.
Yeah, so just a nice beater, axe or hatchet, something that you can really, that will, could work to fell small
saplings
and cut up deadfall.
Split kindling.
Something, just the basics that when we all started off, we were just playing around, chopping stuff up, splitting stuff. And then from there, once you're like, okay, I know how to use this one, and I've reached my limits with it, it'll be nice to have in the arsenal, but I want to upgrade to something next. So without further ado, we should start rambling, stop rambling about
and actually get to the list.
This list and actually read the list. So I'm going to start with my first little trifecta of cutting tools. It could even be a quadrant. I added in one on the end, but I think this group of three is a great place to start with edge tools.
Good all around kit.
You've got a saw, a knife, and a hatchet. That's something that you can do most of the things that a 16-year-old would do in the woods with it anyway. You can whittle with a knife, you can sharpen the end of a stick and make a spear. Like we all kind of gravitate towards.
Yep.
And then a saw has everything you need to really process wood for a little fire, because that's what they're going to be doing anyway.
Yeah, simple lean-to shelters, things like that.
So yeah, for the saw, a good cheaper option is the Backo Laplander.
Yes.
Even advanced and experienced bushcrafters love this little saw. You're not going to be able to buck up 9-inch logs or anything, but at the same time, you want the user to have a little more experience before they start felling larger trees. At this point, I think for safety wise, I think you only really want to be taking down saplings and things that are already laying on the ground. So yeah, I think the Backo, which comes up at a price point about $42.50, I think I checked, and that was on the Canadian Outdoor Equipment website.
Okay. Yeah.
So nice. For $42.50, it's a nice little starter, and it's got replaceable blades as well. So in case they, well, inevitably, I feel like someone starting off might break a blade or two.
Or at least really deform it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've brought my personal folding saws out on trips with school groups and even college kids. And then a lot of the times it comes back with a bent tip because they didn't quite understand how the pinching works of a log while you cut it. They were trying to go too fast, and they were not going at a perfectly 90-degree angle,
mm-hmm.
and you end up bending or snapping the blade of the saw. So.
And most people say, well, the silky saws, the gomboys and the big boys and all that stuff, they're so much better. They're so much this. They're also more fragile.
Yeah.
I have broken a lot more silky saw blades than I've ever broken. Mm-hmm. But I think I've broken 2 Bako saw blades mm-hmm. in my entire life. And I've been using Bakos since I was like 13.
Yeah.
And I've used silkies for about 5 years. And I've broken 5 or 6 blades now.
Yeah.
So... it's a little bit more expensive to get a silky saw, and they do cut a little nicer on certain mm-hmm. things, and they've got nice features to them and yada yada yada, but that doesn't mean they're better.
Yeah.
Especially for someone that's just getting into it. Oh, and a dog is walking into the room. Here we go. We've been trying to keep him content with peanut butter filled marrow bones, but I think he's done with the peanut butter already. I totally agree. And honestly, I've seen you carrying your Bako everywhere, and you're an experienced woodsman, and you still use a Bako Laplander, which proves the point of, like, it's a good tool.
It's like the folding knife of saws.
Yes.
It's not too big. It can still fit in your pocket.
Totally.
So if I'm just going out to cut down some saplings for a job, if I'm cutting down some branches,
mm-hmm.
it's just nice and easy use. It cuts through like butter.
Mm-hmm.
So just for those simple tasks, why am I going to bring out, like, a 14-inch buck saw? Or,
put it all together, and by the time you get to setting it up, you could have cut that sapling with a Bako faster.
Yeah, so that's one of my top picks. I think that's the easiest to go.
Totally.
So for $42.50, it's not too bad. And for this trifecta, it's going to be about $100 total. So that's not
far
out of the average price range.
Yeah. Your whole kit together would be around $100.
You get a kit ready to go for these three. So the next one I have is a knife.
Mm.
And you can never go wrong with Moras.
Mm-mm.
The Mora Companion, any of these Moras will cost you between $20 and $40.
Yeah.
And they're nice and easy. Even for the kids, they have the Scout model these days.
That's true. Yeah.
And they have some, I think they come both with a pointed tip and a rounded tip.
Which is good.
So the younger they are, you might get them a rounded tip one. Just something to get them used to the motions, and they're just whittling. They risk less chance of poking themselves or stabbing someone around them with the rounded tip. So Moras, they're not going to be going crazy into batoning yet.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to necessarily need a full tang blade at this point.
Yep.
So, and at $20, you're not too worried about, not my $400 file knife and A1 or anything like that.
No.
So, yeah, this is something you're going to see them smacking it around and stuff, and you're not going to worry too much.
And there's a lot of variations and different models of Mora knives. There's the ones that have the birchwood handles that are laminated steel that a lot of the carvers, like the 106s and the 105s, that a lot of bushcraft and carvers really love.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really affordable. So, like, before I rant too long, there's a lot of range. So wherever your price point is, you can find a Mora knife that will be really good.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to spend, you know, there are models of bushcraft, of the bushcraft models of Moras that are like $60, $70, $80, sometimes more.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need that. Any of the Mora knives that you can find in your price point will do just fine.
You don't necessarily need to start with, like, the Mora Garberg, which is full tang,
heavy duty,
like an actual bushcraft knife, once you start getting into that mid-range of knives.
Mm-hmm.
But if they have already worked on their Moras and they've used, like, a small companion or something like that, you could definitely move up to a Garberg
or
something like that.
Or the Bushcraft Black and a few other models.
Another option I was thinking, I've talked about it before on the podcast, is the Schrade.
Yep.
SCF-36, I want to say.
I think that's the one,
I think that was the one. I have one of those, and it's like the, what's the BK2?
Yeah, the Becker BK2.
The Becker, the K-Bar,
Yeah.
So it's like a cheaper version of that, but at the same time, everyone I've seen things from, they love them.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. I've used it. I've used it as my little loan out knife when I've been working workshops.
Mm-hmm.
had people batoning with it, and they've nicked the handle on it, and it hasn't broken off.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little scratch here and there, so it's not something you worry too much about lending out or giving to someone who's inexperienced. And again, snapping the handle off, snapping the blade.
Exactly.
I think the blade itself is an eighth of an inch.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good heavy-duty blade. It's one of those ones you could stab into a tree and stand on. So
right.
It's a nice beater knife, and I think it still goes even for around the $60 range.
That's not bad.
So, yeah. So, yeah, my first was the Mora plus the Baco, and you're looking at about $60 right there.
Right.
So one last recommendation for knives at this point. I will be talking a little more about carving knives later on the list. But right now, I think also the Green River by Russell.
Mm.
That's a good, it's a classic one. Easy $20 knife.
Yeah. I think it was $21.50 when I got yours last year.
Yeah. And it's a 200-year-old design, but it still works. I was surprised by how sharp it was.
Yeah.
It's a nice thin blade too, so you can carve with it. We've skinned with them.
Yep.
You can use it for pretty much everything. It's the classic Bushman knife.
When we build birch bark canoes, that's the number one knife I use when we're working on them, because it slices through birch bark really well.
Yeah.
And it also is really good at splitting down thin cedar when you're trying to do sheathing and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a very good general purpose knife. I would also say that it would be a very good knife for skinning all the time. It's a great knife for skinning. I'm trying to get the dog away from us. He brought a stick over.
I was worried he's going to knock this table over.
That's what I was trying to aim him.
I put my hand
I was trying to aim and get him to go this way. Oh, he brought the stick back because he's learned to retrieve, apparently. The one thing I would say about the Green Rivers that is not like the Moras and the Shred knife is it's not something I would ever want to put into batoning.
Yeah.
It's good for hand splitting cedar and such, but it's not something, it's such a thin steel that it would easily get broken, not necessarily broken, but deform that blade really quickly if you start putting into something like a piece of elm or something you're trying to split into kindling.
And so, it also doesn't come with a sheath either.
That is the other issue. I love the Green River knives by Russell, but they don't make sheaths.
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't make sheaths, but they just don't have an interest in making them.
Yeah, you just happen to have a spare sheath that I think you got from Nan's or something.
Yeah, my grandmother just dropped off a sheath one day and it happened to be the perfect size for that knife.
Yeah, so that was the only blessing of that was that someone had brought a sheath for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for a beginner, you might want to have a contingency plan of how you're going to sheath it.
Yeah.
In that sense, if you're an experienced parent in the bushcrafting, your grandparent, and you know how to make a sheath or know someone who can, then do that. But I think the Moras, they come, everything pretty is kind of indestructible.
Yeah.
It's a composite, so it's not, you don't have to worry about it getting all wet and deformed
rotting away
and everything. So I think the biggest childproof one would be the Mora.
100%.
It's not too heavy. That's the one thing with the Shred is it starts to get up to a 1-pound knife.
Yeah, it's a beater.
It's a little unwieldy to swing around and do stuff with. So yeah, Mora, 100%, would always recommend for a young child.
Definitely.
Especially the Scout if they're just even under 10 sort of thing. Something nice. Even the handle has the flared bulge on the end of it just to give them something to hold on to so it doesn't slip through their hands.
Totally.
So, yeah, perfect. So then the third, the axe/hatchet, would be the Fiskars X7.
Yes.
This is the one that I had when Steph brought out Aiden.
Right, right.
And then he was wanting to go, he was even wanting to use it as a throwing axe. And then I was like, don't take any of the other ones. Just take my Fiskars.
If you're going to break anything, break that one.
Yeah. The Fiskars line, they're not the prettiest ones.
No.
And they don't have the most uses. The X7 has a nice aggressive edge. It's a thick edge. but you're still able to get deep into the wood while chopping.
Yeah.
You're able to split with it.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to do any little
pounding task tent pegs, yeah, exactly. Whatever you need to do.
So I feel like that. And it's so now it's been used as a throwing axe, and I've never worried about the handle on it mm-hmm. at all. I have seen people play around with it, and they fill the handle with a little survival kit and everything like that.
Yeah, and they make like a plug at the end.
Plug it at the end because it's a hollow handle, composite handle.
Mm-hmm.
But even in cold weather, warm weather, it's always been perfect. So yeah, the X7 and 8 ranges for about $45, I think.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
So yeah, those three together, pretty much $100, $105. Mm-hmm. This is Canadian prices we're all talking about yes. right now.
Yes.
So yeah, even maybe even better in the States. So.
Yeah, could be. And there's also the fact that with the Fiskars line, if the X7, you feel like, oh, maybe I don't want to give them a hatchet because they don't have a lot of axe craft. There's always larger ones that are still fairly reasonable priced.
Mm-hmm.
Even my heavy duty splitting maul that I got that we've been using hard for like yeah. 6 years now, I think I pay like $80
mm-hmm.
for that thing. So you're not, with Fiskars, you're getting decent quality for a low price.
Yeah, you're not getting an expertly picked ash handle or anything yeah. like that for your axe.
It's not going to
be hand forged
yeah.
blade or anything. It's going to be all the cut costs in all the right places.
Totally.
And just finish engineering. We love the Scandinavian style for our blades and mm-hmm. everything. So something like that. Yeah, you can beat it up all day and night and not have to worry about it. So,
definitely.
Yeah. Other than that, because, yeah, then once you start looking for a full-size axe, you're starting to look at the more $100 options. So yeah. So far, Bakko Laplander, Mora Companion, and the Fiskars X7. Nice trio there to get you started. If you
definitely
have a $100 limit, give or take a couple bucks, and you want to get them something nice to get them really started and something that they will use for the next few years,
mm-hmm.
it's those three. Because then, yeah, once you start going up on the axes, you can get some decent Hultfors
yep.
for $70 to $100.
Yeah, Husqvarnas.
When you start getting up there, it's around $100 is where you kind of start for that. Even something like the S-Swing E45A, I think, is...
Those are great axes.
It's my beater that I've had for a while. It's a nice felling axe, but you're not going to be able to really split anything.
It's pretty thin.
More just an aggressive... It's like a machete tip on a two-pound axe.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
So it's a very aggressive, sharp edge that you'll be able to use for felling, but... Yeah, not a lot of splitting. So that's why I would recommend starting with something like the Fiskars.
I concur.
But then, if you want even something to go with that, is a multi-tool.
Yes.
I think a multi-tool is even, it's nice little starting point on its own. I think I started off with a little Swiss Army Victorinox to start. My grandfather gifted to me when I was a teenager. And it comes with a little penknife on it. It comes with all the little tools. And I think even if you're starting with whittling and stuff like that, and that's all your kid is doing so far, and you're not necessarily a bush person yourself.
Yeah.
So starting with something like that is a nice little all-in-one option, a little whittling knife. And then even if you want to work your way up to a Leatherman or something, that can give them a nice all-around tool if they're really getting serious about it.
Definitely.
So
I've had a few Leathermans. My favorite one so far is one that I actually inherited from my dad. It was one of the original Victorinox, or not Victorinox, Leatherman tools. But the waves, the charges, you can go lower if you want for a smaller, like a young kid, you can go with a much smaller one.
Yeah.
Nothing's wrong with them. The Gerber Pro Scout model was my favorite growing up, but they're hard to find these days, and they're a lot more expensive. So I would honestly go with a Leatherman over a Gerber, even though I prefer the Gerber one.
Yeah, the thing I liked about my Gerber one, I haven't been able to find it for a year or two recently. I have no idea where it went. but it's still folded up. But then the needle nose pliers part, they popped in and out.
Yeah, they're out the front opening.
So they're not like the butterfly style where you flip it over and around and then they're right there.
Yeah.
They just have a couple little locking buttons on each side and then pull it up and out.
Yeah, and they were... What I liked about the Pro Scout, again, kind of going on a tangent on the other side, is the saw blade was a Sawzall attachment.
Okay.
So you could put any, if your saw blade wears out or it breaks on, you just pop a new one in.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to go with a bigger Sawzall, it wouldn't fit inside the handle, but you could always click one on, bring that within your pack to cut down larger things.
Yeah.
So I always like that about it. But again, it's a higher price point. They're harder to find. Mm-hmm. You can get a Leatherman Wave at most... Canadian Tires, Walmarts. I've even seen them at Home Depot. Yeah. So they're a lot easier to find. Mm-hmm. And they're a really good quality tool.
I think the only downside for a child would be that they don't have locking blades.
Yeah.
So it's a folding knife without a locking blade. So you have to keep the pressure going against the blade edge.
Yeah.
So if they try to do anything like that and they're just fooling around.
Boring into a piece of wood or something.
For a younger child, it might not be the best option. But someone who's had a little bit of experience with knives.
Yeah.
Typically, we see most teenagers. Steph brought Aiden's knife. It's sitting up on the cabinet right there. It, like the old grandparents kind of knives, something that's from the 60s or 50s. Sometimes with the bone handle or antler handle or
leather the stacked leather kind of grips.
Yeah, yeah, and just a little rat tail tang going through it with a little pin on the other end kind of holding it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And they tend to kind of wiggle loose after a few years of use.
Yes, so, they do.
So yeah, something more modern. Everything's kind of making its rounds and getting better manufactured these days.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, something like that. Those four are good places to start, I think.
For cutting tools and regular tools.
For cutting tools, yeah.
I would agree with that very much so.
So yeah, from there on, we'll think canteen. Something to hold your water.
Good. Good idea.
The cheap option is an Nalgene bottle.
Yep.
Virtually indestructible. I've seen them get run over by cars and still keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a nice 1 liter option, 32 ounces.
Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
I swung a golf club at one once just to see what it could handle.
And yeah.
There's a little bit of, it was one of the older models and they used to have BPA and everything in the Lexan.
Yeah.
It's spider webbed, but it still kept on ticking. We actually have one at the camp right now that's one of our warnings to students about their gear, where it was left too close to a long log fire and it bulged out into a big balloon on one side, and the bottle still works. I wouldn't want to use a melted plastic bottle just because of contamination of water, but it shows you how far they can go and keep on ticking. Great
and,
price
and point. At least these days too, they're BPA free.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to be getting too many like harmful chemicals or anything like that in there. My first Nalgene, I think I got when I was 14 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up using it for outdoor ed for winter camping and doing learning the whole warm water in the Nalgene bottle and keeping in your sleeping bag while you sleep. I didn't have a cold night ever sleeping my first winter camping trips because of that trick.
Yep.
Put one right at your feet if you want, or else you can just cuddle around it and keep your core warm. So that's a nice cheap option, or else there's stuff like the clean canteens.
Yeah.
A stainless steel option. You can actually use that to boil water if you need to. It's a nice little piece of kit. And then if you get yourself something like a stainless steel mug, there's a lot of them perfectly nest
into a clean canteen or an Nalgene.
Canteen or Nalgene.
The one thing I'll say about if you're looking at stainless steel water bottles and you don't necessarily want to pay the money for a clean canteen, because they are up there. They're up there like 50, 60 bucks sometimes. Mm-hmm. Look for single walled. That's the number one thing. Don't look for, because if you're going to go with a stainless steel bottle, sometime the kid is going to probably want to put it on the fire and boil tea in it.
That's the thing.
If it's a double walled or vacuum sealed kind of thing, almost like a thermos or a Stanley, you're going to have a bad time. But if it's a regular single walled steel bottle, you're pretty good to go.
Which I've seen a lot of them for $30 to $40 range.
Yep.
Nice and easy. Other thing I would check is like wide mouth versus the narrow one. Sometimes mm-hmm. a wide mouth is a little easier to get things in and out of. You can eat out of them a little yep. easier. And then also the lid materials.
Yep, that's a good point. A lot of them
are plastic ones. So in case if you're having those over a fire, you might end up with a little bit of melting around the top.
Yep.
So something just to keep in mind. If you want to have a beater, then get all metal parts.
Yep.
So, yeah, that'll be a nice little thing. Canteen, stainless steel cup. Cups you can get for about $15.
Yeah.
Or else you could even go the enameled mug route, but I kind of like the stainless steel.
Yeah, with the butterfly wings so it can still fit inside of a canteen sleeve or yeah. something. Yeah, I like those.
They're nice and easy to store away, and it kind of goes with the whole nesting thing. If you nest it inside a cup with a fixed handle, then you just have that handle sticking out, and you can't yeah. really slide it down the pocket of a yeah. pack or anything like that.
I think GSI makes a good folding handled one.
Yeah.
I had one. I loved it. I'm hoping to pick it back up when I go back to Colombia because I left it in the Maloca when we left. So I'm hoping to pick that back up. But yeah, folding handle canteen cup is a great option. And if you're going for canteens, you can also look Army Surplus and look mm-hmm. for a steel canteen that has one of those steel exactly. canteen cups.
It's that exact same idea yeah. as the old GI setup. Yeah. So the plastic canteen and a stainless steel
cup. That's perfect.
Nesting cup. So from there, we've kind of got the basic pieces of kit so far. So I'm going to start with fire from there.
I like where this is going.
Fire. You got to teach kids about fire young.
Yeah.
You got to, like anything, can't hide them from it.
No.
You got to teach them how to respect knives, sharp tools, and fire from a young age.
100%.
So it just becomes second nature to them by mm-hmm. the time they're even in their teen years. Like, oh yeah, that's a fire. I've done that multiple times with my mom or dad. So, yeah. So something like a ferro rod. Teach them mm-hmm. easy. They're not going to be going and just lighting fires anywhere. They can only light fires with something that catches a spark.
Definitely.
It's not like a lighter where they're just going to go around like a pyromaniac just, just burning little bits off of everything.
And the beauty with the ferro rod is it's... you have to learn with it. You have to yeah. practice with it. They're not going to mm-hmm. get it the first time. So this is a good teaching tool with them.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I would add to that is make sure they keep the striker, the yeah. scraper. When they're youth, when they're just getting this, and as well as adults, I still think that that is a better route than the knife.
Yeah.
Because it's a better, safer way to light the fire.
I've even cut the tip of my thumb from the spine of a knife before.
Mm-hmm.
One of the times I was using my little Light My Fire Moras with the ferro rod that pops out of the handle.
Yep.
I was squeezing my thumb. I was like, I had the ferro rod in one hand holding on to it tightly. And then I was scraping with the back of the knife. And all of a sudden I lit the fire and then I stood up. And there was blood dropping on the ground, and I didn't even notice. And then the guy I was with was like, yo, you just cut your thumb, I think. Like, what? I don't feel anything. I looked at it, and I just, like, scraped a layer of skin off the top of my thumb while I was trying to scrape the ferro rod. Didn't even notice it. I guess since it was a newer knife that it still had a bit of a sharp spine to it, I hadn't really done anything. I think it might have been the first time I'd used it to light a fire. But yeah, it's a little more dangerous when you get them. It's like a little kind of credit card thickness
mm-hmm.
piece of stainless steel metal or yeah. high carbon metal for the scrapers. So.
Yeah, I had one for a while. I think it's in my tool bag still from UCO when I got their steel their ferro rod or fire steel a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I loved the scraper over the rod.
Yeah,
because the scraper was very useful. It's nice, good thick steel. It was made really well.
Yeah,
but yeah, you can even get like a doohickey from Canadian Tire or Home Depot from Night Eyes, and those little doohickey things that go in your keychain with a carabiner. They're a great scraper for a ferro rod.
Yeah.
So if you get one that has kind of a crappy scraper that you feel is a little too tin metal kind of feel or it's not going to hold up, you can get other options.
Yeah, the ones I've found that come with like the $12 to $15 machetes and those really yeah. ones that look like they're just cut out of a piece of sheet metal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have an edge or anything.
Yeah.
That's why I didn't recommend any of those for the blades on the list.
Yeah.
Some, like, those ones, they come with, like, a little cheap ferro rod with a plastic handle.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, a really flimsy, just, like, a saw blade thickness scraper that bends, and you try to scrape it, and it doesn't produce a spark whatsoever. It
fizzles a couple little warm spots, and that's about it.
Yeah. So, the other ones, like, a lot of, I like that some, most of them come with a lanyard on them.
Yes.
It does restrict your motion. You feel like you're handcuffed a bit while doing it, but once you get the feel of your limitations mm-hmm. for it, it's still there. It's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's the tool that's right for the job.
Gerber makes a good fire steel. Light My Fire, of course, they're one of the first companies to really put them on the market.
Yeah.
They do very good jobs with those. There's another company that they're the ones you find on Amazon. I can't remember the actual name. It starts with a U, Uberlife, isn't there, something like that. It's a, I believe it's a German word to all of our European listeners. I apologize if I'm not saying things. I'm anglicized as hell with my language. So apologies for that, but I believe, they come with a pretty decent scraper. The rods are really good, but the majority of the time, Light My Fire Gerber are the ones
I've got my Light My Fires from Canadian Tire,
yep.
and they're often on sale. You find the Light My Fire
like stuff. $8 sometimes or less.
Yeah, it's nice and cheap. You find good deals on it, and you can't really go wrong with it for what you're using it for. Like when you've got 10 bucks and you think about how many fires you can start for it, you end up pennies per
quarter fire of a penny
by the time you end up using it all. So, and then say what you will about the Gerber Bear Grills kind of stuff, but my ferro rod that kind of nests into itself and clicks back together mm-hmm. and has a little compartment for some tinder on the end for like a little Vaseline soaked cotton ball, I think that was 15 to 20 bucks.
That's not a bad price.
So, and I really like the scraper on that because it's kind of angled. It's cupped.
Oh, so
it has focus. A really nice edge on it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A nice thin edge that can really get a good scraping, and it was throwing nice sparks when
awesome. We
were working with it yesterday.
That's so, true. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. Nice little options there. There are the other options, like the little magnesium things.
Yep, the classic Hoagland or Dome one.
I've never been able to really get the hang of those. Like a ferro rod is very idiot proof, but like especially the ones, like you get the Coughlin's one, it comes like the little saw blade kind of scraper thing, and I'm like, what is this little rod on the one edge, and then there's the big brick of magnesium, and then
I've carried them for years and I know they work because I've tested them to work, and like U.S. military carried them for decades. They do work, but A, they're really bulky.
Yeah.
B, you need to scrape for a long time to get enough magnesium. Whereas I could always find some birch bark or make really fine wood shavings a lot faster than making that tiny little dinky pile work. Where I find it useful is if things are a little wet, I can get a little bit of magnesium scraped off into my birch bark, and that just dries the birch bark enough to get it to light.
Yeah.
That's the only time I've ever found them really useful.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, yeah, I agree with you on that.
Yeah. They're fun to have and play around with, but they're just not as idiot-proof as a ferro rod.
Yeah.
All you need to really think about with a ferro rod is getting your angle with the scraper right, and once you're throwing sparks, it's second nature to you.
And there's different ways to use it, so that if you're standing, you can throw the sparks hard.
Yeah.
If you're real tight close, you don't want to knock everything, how to immobilize the scraper and pull the rod.
Yeah.
It's a lot of good learning for youth, for someone who's getting into this stuff. It gives you a lot of different techniques to experiment. My favorite is when I train under Moore's, he goes, you know you're good when you can light a candle with one. Do you guys know how to light a candle with a ferro rod? And everyone's like, I was like, I think I know. I've seen people do it. And then he just showed us all these little tips and tricks on how to do that and make you just that much better with the ferro rod. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways to grow with them, a lot of ways to go with them. The dog has found a twig. She's going to quietly chew on it now, hopefully. But yeah, ferro rod's a great, great option. It's a good stocking stuffer, too, if you're just looking for something to give them. You've already got a bunch of stuff for them. You're like, oh, they just got into bushcraft the last couple of weeks. What could I get them? A ferro rod. Throw in the stocking, you're good to go.
Yeah, because even if you get them a box of Stormproof matches, they'll probably go through it
in an hour.
The first like day or two that they have them, they'll just be lighting them for fun and watching them go, ooh.
I mean, we do too. I can't blame them.
Yeah. Yeah, they're fun to play with. Like, even yesterday when we were teaching a class about it, we're showing how you could dip it in water.
Blow on it as hard as you want.
You can bury it in the sand, pull it back out, and it's still going to go. So, yeah. I think even a teaching moment with a ferro rod is teaching them how to use it properly.
Totally.
How to really put everything in order first before they get it going, and they're not just going and flicking a lighter 100 times while they have one little baby piece of birch bark and a few twigs, and they're like, oh yeah, this is enough to start a fire. You really need to have everything in order to start a fire with a ferro rod, but once you do, it's pretty simple.
Yeah, and again, it's all that education, and that's part of this, is learning this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because hopefully, if you're looking at buying your kid these things, you're going to be participating them in this. You go camping, they're going to be right there using that saw, knife, hatchet, everything that we're going to list on this.
Carrying their own water.
Exactly. Yeah. So this will be something that they're like, this is mine. I'm not just borrowing mom's or dad's or whatever. So, yeah, I think there needs to be an educational part of these gifts.
Definitely.
One little extra thing I added to my little fire section here was the pocket bellows.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a fun little thing.
Yeah.
Kids love playing with the fire. They like poking a stick in the fire all the time.
Who doesn't love that, though?
They like blowing on the fire and watching the coals glow hotter and the flames shoot up. So I think the pocket bellows is a good little fun way to implement that, and especially learning how to properly use it. It's a nice little way to start a fire from small little bit of kindling, but then getting that oxygen in there and getting it raging within a few seconds, especially if you're working with like damp wood.
Definitely. And if you're getting them into coal burning, or they've learned about coal burning bowls or spoons or cups, that pocket bellow, it's a telescoping little tube.
Yeah.
So it all comes apart like the old classic retractable car antennas. And you can retract it down real small and use it as a focal point to blow on that little ember that you have on that piece of wood to make your bowl for your spoon or cup or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it's a good multi-use gadget that I used to laugh at people that carry those things. Now I have one and I like it. I like having it.
Well, so even before I got one, because I think I ended up picking one up when I was at the Toronto Adventure Show from the Canadian Outdoor Equipment booth. I saw it there. Oh, this is a cool little thing to play with, because before I had taken the tube from a pen, I'd taken out the ink, I'd taken out the ballpoint, taken off the back cap, and it was just a plastic tube. So that was my little fire bellows, but I had to get my face within 4 inches.
And now you have this piece of plastic near the fire. So,
Yeah, using it that way. And when I saw this, I was like, that's a pretty cool idea to get it, a nice telescoping fire bellow for it. So yeah, I think that's a nice little extra add-on. And those can range anywhere from $15 to $20. There's off-brand ones on Amazon and everything you can find. So yeah, I think that made for a good little package of fire-starting equipment. So from there, to kind of keep going with the fire, is some sort of stove, for kids or young adults or whoever's getting into it might want a stove, but you don't want to give them a fueled stove yet, or if you want something big, that they can keep jet using. So, but like we said before, this isn't necessarily just for kids, although this is typically where you'd find it and who you're going to be buying these gifts for. So, twig stoves. Twigs and branches that you can do. So, yeah, twig stoves, there's the solo stove. Even though some of these tend to go up towards the $100 range still.
Yep.
Like the little MSR pocket rocket and things you can find for $20 to $40. but at the same time, you're going to be having to use fuel canisters with it. So it's something that's a little more advanced. But if you're already an adult, yeah, go for like a little tiny folding canister stoves.
Why not?
And something nice and easy, but I figure with the bushcraft, go with a nice little twig stove. That was, I think, the first stove I bought was a solo stove.
Mm.
I'd read about it has the double burn and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Gasifies and burns that. And once you get it really going, then it just burns everything down the ash and you're just adding a little twig here and there.
Yeah.
So it's something nice and simple and you kind of feel like you're still being crafty out in the woods with it.
Our buddy Mikhail has one as well in the market that's been out for about a decade now.
The Emberlit.
Yeah. He's got his fire ant. They're a little bit higher up in price, but they're really, really good quality. He's one of the first companies to put a twig burning Nimblewell style stove on the market.
Yeah.
So they're great quality stuff.
Yeah. It's one of those ones that is just in sheets and you kind of put it together. So it lays flat when it's packed down.
Mm-hmm.
You barely notice it shoved into a pack.
Mm-hmm.
But then you take it out.
Click, click, click.
Click, click, click it all together, and it's four pieces or so, and maybe a bottom, and a little grate on top, and...
Good to go.
It's good to go, and it's nice, too, because it's got a little more area to feed that fire on the inside. Yeah, but beware of, like, knockoffs. Some of them will probably warp, and they won't fit together anymore.
That's the thing.
And everything, so, yeah. You kind of get what you pay for. There's always a cheaper option out there, but it's not necessarily going to work the same as it would with one of the better quality ones.
Exactly.
And then even an upgrade from all of them is stuff like the Kelly kettle, where you get pretty much like a cook pot, kettle, and a twig stove all in one sort of thing. So I'm not sure if you can still use it like a cook stove, or if the only option is using it as the kettle.
So I've seen people play with it. I was going to bring this up because I've never been fully sold on the Kelly kettles. Yeah. I've had a few students bring them out. We've played with them. And they do boil water really, really well.
Yeah.
And if you're doing just like, you know, dehydrated meals, you just got to add hot water to.
Exactly.
Perfect. It's great.
Yeah.
But if you want to cook, I've seen a few people take like coat hanger material, make almost like a stand that goes on top of the flame top.
Yeah.
And then you can put like a little pan on there. You can actually put a little grill over that. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, just, you know, whittle a stick with your Mora knife.
Yeah.
Put a hot dog and just put it right over the flame. That works just fine too. But it is a very concentrated flame source that's on a very tall, narrow object. So you don't want to put something heavy like a frying pan on top.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen people get by with cooking small things on it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for stove, I think that's really as far as you would need to go.
Yep.
Unless you're just going nice little folding. Primus makes pretty good ones too.
Yep. Woods and Coleman makes them as well now.
Like the Primus one, I have the classic trail stove was like one of the first canister stove tops I used.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice, like it's a big one too. So you have some room to really
put a big pot,
on it. It's not something I'd want to put too big of a pot on, but for something between 1 and 2 liters.
Totally.
That's all you really need for, especially if this is just someone who's going to go off into the woods by themselves for a day or two, a week sort of thing, and go out, make some coffee or hot chocolate and chill out in the woods for a bit. Like I kind of started off doing when I was getting into bushcraft. So
totally,
that's all you really need. So from there, I feel like to go with that would be stainless steel cook sets.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I feel that's another little easy one because if you want to go camping and you want to do little overnighters, I think a decent little stainless steel cook set is a way to go. And I start off with a little GSI one. I can't remember how much it cost, but it probably wasn't even more than $50.
Yeah.
And it came with the frying pan. It came with a pot. And I think the frying pan worked as like a lid for the pot. And then it comes inside with a little bowl, a little mug.
Mm-hmm.
And it came with a little pot gripper thing. I can't remember what they're called.
They're everywhere. Everybody makes them. And I know exactly what you're talking about. The little, has almost like a kickstand grip on there that you just kind of hold on to and pinch down.
Yeah, just pinches onto the
I think I have like two in the kitchen right now as we're speaking.
Yeah. I remember there was a name for them, but yep. it's escaping me right yeah. now. So.
It's one of those things, 2 hours from after we record this and we're both laying in our beds, we'll be like, oh, crap, it's this.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll text each other and laugh our asses off. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, there's MSR makes those, Alicant makes those, GSI makes their version, Primus makes their version. There's a lot of variations. And again, if you're looking for inexpensive, there's also like the mess tins from Military Surplus yeah. is another option to go with. Mm-hmm. They're a little smaller. They're usually, a lot of the ones I've seen are like square shaped or rectangle shaped, and yeah. often they're aluminum, which is something you may want to take into consideration if that's a concern of yours.
That was one of my next things. There's a lot of cheap options that are anodized aluminum out there, mm-hmm. but especially for cooking over open fire, open flame,
yeah.
I would recommend against it.
Yeah.
There has been studies just for health effects of mm-hmm. it. You will notice the coating bubbling and flaking off mm-hmm. after a few uses. So that's why I pretty much stay with stainless steel.
Yeah.
And then even if you're going to titanium anyway, you're going to be spending quite a bit extra on that pot.
And titanium doesn't cook things very well.
It's very spotty with yeah. how it conducts heat.
If you're just boiling water, again, going back to boiling water, sure, yeah. titanium's great. But if I'm trying to like sear a steak yeah. or a fish we caught on a canoe trip,
yeah.
I'd rather something stainless or carbon steel. You can get yeah. very thin carbon steel skillets mm-hmm. and stuff as well. But the nesting mess kit that you're talking about, the simple pot, pan, and a couple of eating tools, mm-hmm. you can't go wrong with that. And they're very yeah. they're fairly affordable, almost any brand. It's such an easy thing to make. Most yeah. brands keep them fairly cheap just to be competitive.
And there's quite a big thing about the sporks out there these days.
Yeah.
But I would go against it. Like Light My Fire has like a little fork sport combo yeah. sort of tool. But the handles are never long enough mm-hmm. to use with like a backpacking meal.
Yeah.
And there's no real use for a spork. I find like you might as well have a fork, a spoon, and a knife.
Yeah.
Like you can find nice cheap titanium mm-hmm. sets of three stainless steel sets, and I have quite a few of those at yeah. home. Where it's all attached by a carabiner, and you can remove them and yeah, use yeah. them separately. But they still fit in the nesting set.
Yeah. Our friend Mikhail, again, go over to emberlit.com, check out his stuff. This is not a sponsored podcast, just to clarify. We're just fans of his work. He has the sprongs, where it's a fork and spoon that nest together, and then when you click them apart, you have a fork and a spoon, or you click them reverse, and now yeah. you have a pair of tongs.
Yeah.
And they're made of a kitchen-grade nylon, mm-hmm. so they can handle the heat of frying food and stuff yeah. like that. You wouldn't want to pick coals out of the fire with it as a pair of tongs, but it'll work really well, and they're long enough to reach into yeah. those food bags and stuff.
Well, that's what I love about Mikhail's stuff, is that he's a bushcrafter first and mm-hmm. an inventor second. Exactly. So his ideas come from his experience out in the bush.
Exactly.
So it's not just some guy in a boardroom who's like, you know what would be cool?
I got an idea, guys.
Let's make this. And then it comes and it's just the worst thing imaginable. No, this is a guy that actually is out there doing it.
Yeah.
Comes up with these ideas and puts it in the motion and 100%. Makes a useful bushcraft tool.
Oh yeah, his fire steels, his mm-hmm. his stoves, the sprongs. He's got so many great ideas. So if you're looking for just even like if you're looking for gear for yourself and you've got everything you think you need, check out emberlit.com. Merkware is the brand, but Emberlit is the website. Check it out. They've got some great stuff on there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, stainless steel cook set. Get that for $50 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Once you start working your way up, you'll get some nicer stuff, but it sure. can be done for under $50.
Totally.
And then even with a nice little set of a fork, a knife, and a spoon, and that's all you really need, they will fit inside the nesting set too. So, yeah, it's a nice, easy option as well. And to keep with the kitchen is water filters.
Ooh, yeah.
So I think something like that is nice and easy, and it's something that needs to happen if you're going to be spending extended time in the woods. You can't bring out gallons of water with you every time you go. So
this is one of those necessary evils when it comes down to price point. Like, it's something you're going to want to buy. You're going to want to get one of these. Yes, you can get away with just boiling water. I can tell you right now, it sucks to just boil water. As someone who's boiled water in his home for a few months at a time, mm-hmm. when water systems failed in my community, boiled water sucks. Mm-hmm. It does. You got to boil, especially in the summertime. You boil the water, and I got to wait 2 hours for that liter of water to cool down. Mm-hmm. And by then, you need more than 2 liters of water because you've overheated from all the work you've been doing.
Especially since a beginner will most likely be doing this in the summer. They mm-hmm. go on vacation with the family. Mm-hmm. They're doing something while camping. They're not necessarily going to be out in winter where your water cools in 5 minutes.
Yeah. Sort of thing. Just, oh, it's boiling hot. Stick it in the snow. But yeah, water filter is a great thing on this list.
Yeah. So I think we even talked about this last episode. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go back to before I was like, oh, get high volume, something that you can put up. And but the nicer options for a beginner are stuff like the Sawyer.
Yep.
A Life Straw.
Yep.
Something nice and simple to kind of wet their toes.
Yeah, getting them
used to
it. In the
water filtration game.
The good news is in the last 20 years, I've seen a massive decrease in expense on filters. When I first got into this stuff 20 years ago, water filters started at like $150.
Yeah.
Now they start usually around $60. You can find them at Canadian Tire. You can find them at most camping stores. All camping stores carry water filters, but most like outdoor stores of some sort or another will carry filters. Mm-hmm. There's also, if you are at the end of the day, if you're like, okay, well, I maybe I can't afford them a filter now. I bought them all these tools. The MicroPure tablets from Katadyn, yeah. they contain, each tablet can do 1 liter of water. There's 30 in a pack. Mm-hmm. There's no kid I know that's going to go through 30 liters of water in one camping trip, mm-hmm. and the packet costs like $10.
Yeah.
Add that to the, as again, as a stocking stuffer, mm-hmm. and that way they can learn how to filter their water through a bandana, then use the tablets, and that teaches them how to actually, you know, ration their water overnight. You put the tablet in before you go to bed. By morning, you got clean drinking water again, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that's another great direction to go with it.
Yeah, even the Katadyn...
The Gravity Works.
Stuff like yeah. that. It's, you can get them for just under $100.
Yeah.
For like a nice hiker pump one.
Yep.
Ceramic filter sort of thing. So yeah, if you're buying for someone that already has most of these tools on the list and they're like, oh, I really want a water filter or mm-hmm. something like that, then
there's a direction to look for it.
But then if there's the more advanced aged beginner on your list, I think something like a percolator, a French press, or a pour over.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about our love for coffee before.
Oh, yeah.
And then even some of the people we know who are just getting into bushcraft now, that was something that they never really thought of before. And they've told us, oh, yeah, we didn't really realize how many options there were for doing this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Some people have just done the kettle, or they go out and they're like, oh, percolator, ready to go. But if you're a connoisseur, maybe you want more of a French press. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily want to boil your coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
So the good thing about the percolators is you can use them on a fire again if they're stainless steel.
And as long as that little globe on the top's not plastic.
I find most of them seem to come with the plastic knob on top, the viewing window into the percolator.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though if you look at the enamel ones, it's just an enamel lid. Even the globe is the enamel metal. So you don't have to worry about that. They're a lot more tough than the ones that have the clear plastic. If you're going to go for a percolator, you're going to put on the fire, get one that's the enamel steel. Or I've got one that's a more high-end Coleman. Mm-hmm. I think it cost me like $80.
Yeah.
Again, this is not something you get for someone that's just starting off or if you got a price point or a budget. But it comes with an actual like thermal stable glass globe.
Yeah.
So you can put it on the fire, not have to worry about it. But if you're going for inexpensive, go get the enamel one that you can get at like most big box stores for camping gear.
And then even then, I think one of the first ones I might have got was a GSI. Mm. And it's just like a 2-4 cup. It's like one of the really small single serving style ones. Mm-hmm. Comes nice little basket, comes in a nice little nylon carrying bag, and you're set. It's a little more, and I think it comes with a wooden handle as well on the side, nice. So you can pick it up. You just got to be careful to angle that away from the fire mm-hmm. so you don't burn it up.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, that's an even a nice little learning moment, how to use things over the fire, how to cook around a fire, how to use coals to your advantage.
Yeah.
Not necessarily building a bonfire and hanging it over the top of it.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a nice little other option, because then someone can use it for tea, coffee, hot chocolate.
Yeah.
What I like about the percolators is it's still another cook pot.
Yep. It's just a big kettle. Happens to have a cage in it.
You can make pasta in it.
Yep.
You can make soup in it.
Rice, anything.
So I like items that have multiple uses, and you're not kind of, oh, if you just have a French press, you're not going to be making any spaghetti in that.
Yes. So. That's very true. Very true. Pour over spaghetti. Let's see how that works.
Yeah. At the same time, I do love my AeroPress.
Yep.
$40. Nice compact system. It's better to use for like one person or so. It's a process to kind of
get everybody.
Letting it steep a little bit before you really squeeze it through. Mm-hmm. And then if you're passing around the circle, it's going to be an hour before
Everyone's caffeinated.
Everyone gets it. But yeah, I imagine it depends on who the person you're buying it for is. If they're a person that tends to go out alone, these are some things to think about.
Yeah.
Are they going with you? You might already have the kitchen equipment, and they might not need their own little personal percolator.
Definitely.
At this point in time. So that's always something to keep in mind as well while you're thinking about buying for someone.
Good piece of advice there. Good piece of advice.
So, yeah. So that's pretty standard thought about. We already have our own episode on backcountry coffee and everything, so... So yeah, another option on this list. I would say we've already talked about the knives, but talking a little bit more about carving tools.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You touched on it a little bit there. But yeah, if someone is like, I don't want to necessarily be using it to baton wood or chop down a sapling and do all those rough tasks. But I really like carving. That's like most of the kids that we see, and we give them a knife around us.
They start whittling
on a stick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they really want to do. So you don't necessarily need a beater of a knife to do these things. And it's counterintuitive to be using those types of knives for this. So yeah, something like Beavercraft sets. I think I've talked about those before.
Yep.
How I got my Cooksa kit. That came with a gouge, came with a hook knife, and it came with a Sloyd knife, I believe.
Yep.
So just nice, easy things. Because even now, kids, when you teach them how to carve a spoon, that they just get hooked on. They're like, I can make more than a pointy stick now?
Yep.
My God. This is a revelation that will shock my life to its core.
Yeah, and even when we did the wood carving episode with John Wagner and Radica Dolchek, both of them said, like, Mora 105s or 106s, or look at Beavercraft. And I think even John now is, like, ambassador for Beavercraft tools. So
he's getting all the sponsorships
these
days.
Right.
Flexcut sent him a package a couple weeks ago.
Where's my stuff, Flexcut?
So yeah, Beavercraft, Mora, Flexcut.
They're good brands.
Send us kits.
And they should, yeah, exactly. They're good stuff. You heard me say stuff good about you. Send me stuff now.
We like Christmas gifts too. So yeah, Beavercraft. I love how they have it set up where you can buy packages with, depending, the spoon carving kit, a Cooksa carving kit, and it'll have the specific items for that. And I think I got my kit for about $50.
Nice.
So if you're looking for a nice, easy option, and it's not even going to come close to breaking the bank, so something like that is nice and easy. If not, you can get each knife individually for about $20, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
So... if you just want to get them a little Sloyd knife, and that'll be their like little all-around whittling carving knife, that's a perfect option too, because it still works well, and it gives them an option to get them a little sharpening stone with it or something, and teach them how to sharpen and maintain their knife as well, because that's going to be a big part.
Totally.
When you're a kid, you're like, cut, 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 cut. Now your knife's stolen. You're, oh no, what now? Do I just buy a new knife? Yep. So I think that's another teachable moment with a thing like a carving knife, is teaching them how to, like, the bigger knives, stuff like the Schrade, mm-hmm. like we were talking about earlier, they come with a sharpening stone. They come with, like, a little diamond stone or a mm-hmm. whetstone with a little pouch on the front of the sheath sort of thing. But most of these carving knives, they don't necessarily come with a sheath, and they definitely don't come with a sharpening stone with
yeah. them. There's certain kits from Beavercraft where they come with like a strop, and they might come in a little yeah. like tool roll kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it, you have to buy the kit for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those are good options. Flex cut, you're going to be looking at a little more money when you mm-hmm. start getting up to those kind of options. We're not even going to talk about like the Svante d'Arve and yeah. all those blacksmiths who
make beautiful and, tools.
And John.
Beelzebub and all those companies.
And all that. Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to stay away from that. Just go with the cheap options for now. Beavercraft, yeah. more of flex cut. Flex cut, more mid-range than anything. Yeah,
you're not going to spend like $300 on the kit, but you're definitely going to spend more than the budget we're trying to aim for here.
Yeah. So, without further ado, we'll move on. I think from here on, it's just going to be some little extra things. The next thing I had on my list was stuff like the UCO candle lantern.
Some
light sources.
Yeah, yeah.
We've also talked about our love for the Lucy light.
Oh, yeah.
The Lucy light, I think, is a great option for kids. Mm-hmm. We had them when I worked at camps, and it was the kids' favorite thing. Each tent would get their own Lucy lights, mm-hmm. or else they're all fighting over the one we had for the group sort of thing. So wherever I went after, I was like, yo, go get a Lucy light. Mm-hmm. I told whoever's in charge of ordering the gear for the camp.
Totally.
Go get Lucy lights. Solar powered, so you don't have to worry about batteries mm-hmm. and replacing batteries. The kids love that solar powered. I just put this out in the sun and it'll
charge up
and I'll have a nice little night light in my tent sort of thing. Because that's a big thing about kids in the woods. If you have kids,
yep.
you know they're going to be a little scared about their first experiences mm-hmm. in the woods.
There's your night light.
Always going to have that little champ who's running off from the forest at night. Yeah, let's go see the raccoons. So yeah, something on Lucy light. I love how it blows up. You're not going to break it. There's no real... Unless they, like, try to sit on it or something.
Throw it in the fire or something.
Yeah. Unless they misuse it completely, then I think the Lucy light will last them for quite a while.
And they're safe. Yeah. I love the UCO candle lantern style. Even the single candle or the three candle, whatever. Mm-hmm. A, because it's a great piece of kit that's light. B, it adds heat. So yeah. if you're in a tent, it's every, I believe Moore's once described it as for every candle, it is the equivalent of another person in that shelter with you. Mm-hmm. But, and UCO are safe. They're very safe candle lanterns, the old fashioned candle lanterns that can spill over and spill their molten wax and light your tent on fire. Yeah. They're not the same, but it is a hot item mm-hmm. or tool that will be in a tent with a kid. Mm-hmm. There's the possibility of getting burned. There's the possibility of somehow getting something exposed to that heat and causing fire. Yeah,
for a child, I'll cut you off there.
Yeah.
Nothing around a tent, so that's why I'm going with the Lucy for
that's why I agree with you on that, yeah.
And then the candle lantern for someone like a teenager, not necessarily using it in the tent mm-hmm. until they understand.
Totally.
That's why I was agreeing with you. I'm even sketchy with like giving adults using open flames in and around tents.
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Ever tell you the marshmallow story?
I don't think so.
We had a student pull a wild hogs situation.
Okay.
Where they were cooking a marshmallow and it caught on fire and they did the classic wave it in the air.
Yeah.
To try and put it out and it launched off the stick and landed on the fly of their tent and melted and burned this massive hole right down into their tent.
Yeah.
Luckily they didn't burn the entire tent to the ground like that. What happened mm-hmm. in Wild Hogs, the movie.
Yeah.
But they sure as hell weren't comfortable the next day when it was raining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah. Lucy lights are great for that specific reason that I love the most, is it's safe for anybody to use. You can have it in the tent. You can have it on your pack. You can be holding it. It's just an LED light. There's nothing to worry about there, really.
Yeah. Because even if someone is the safest person, they do their due diligence, They're always handling things with care.
Mm-hmm.
Accidents can happen, especially in a tent. You have it, you just put it down to the side of your ceiling. You're not necessarily hanging it mm-hmm. from the ceiling of your tent. And you pass out. And then you knock it over on its side. Mm-hmm. And it's the classic fell asleep with a cigarette in the hand sort of thing.
Yep.
So, yeah. Open flames, children, tents. I wouldn't recommend that sort of situation. 100%. I don't want to be responsible for
100%.
Someone burning down the tent with a child inside. So,
damn you, Canadian Bushcraft Podcast.
They're coming for us. But then again, even headlamps
mm-hmm.
are very accessible, very cheap for what they provide.
Yeah.
You can get a lot for $20 these days.
Totally.
Like, they sell them at the dollar store, but you don't even need to do dollar store level quality for a headlamp these days.
You can go to a proper camping store.
Yeah.
And get a fairly good headlamp for $20.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
Enough lumens, something that's comfortable, easy to use,
mm-hmm.
takes AAA batteries most of the time, so it's not too heavy on your head.
Yep.
There are still the old kind of mining looking ones. I had an Energizer one like that, where it had the big clunky headlamp on front, and it had the battery pack on the back that took like 3 AA batteries.
Yeah.
So it was pretty clunky. It did the trick for a while, but then I think the wires got jolted out and it just stopped kind of working after a while. But I liked it because it had like the normal light. It had both a green and a red light on it too. A little something that doesn't ruin your night vision.
Yeah.
Something nice and soft that you can read with, because I find a lot of the times there are some of the headlamps that are a little too bright. I feel like people are playing the lumens game these days.
Yeah.
And they get something that could light up the other side of a lake.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's a little unnecessary.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to know how to change the level. You can change the level of brightness on any of them, but they have it on the highest setting, sitting around the campfire with it on all the time. You're talking to them. Every time they look at you,
it blind
blinds you. Right in the face.
And the highest setting kills your battery faster.
Exactly. Like,
you're not going to have it for a long trip. You get that nice bright light on Friday night, and you're blinding everybody and making puppet shows, shadow puppet shows everywhere.
Yeah.
By Sunday evening, when you're trekking out to go back home,
mm-hmm.
you're squinting just to see where you're walking.
Yeah.
Learn to play with your flashlight. Learn how to set it to the lowest setting until you need the brightest setting for something.
And always bring spare batteries.
Yes.
Which you don't need to worry about the Lucy light, but at the same time, the Lucy light can't do what a headlamp does.
Yeah.
A headlamp can't do what a Lucy light does.
Exactly.
Sort of thing. So keep that in mind. So then also you'd brought up earlier, another great option is a Sil Nylon tarp.
Yes.
Shelter. We're not really recommending tents to go get. We're not recommending sleeping bags and sleeping pads. And all that extra gear.
Yeah, hammocks and bug nets. There's
a lot more options out there and a lot more shopping around to get what fits you
mm-hmm.
and your needs. So yeah, we're talking about just the basics.
Basic shelter.
Sil Nylon tarp is really anything that anyone can use.
Yeah.
It gives you a little shelter from the rain, even if you're just going out for a little day trip and mm-hmm. you're going for a hike and you're stopping for lunch and it starts to drizzle or something. Just throw up a little tarp quick.
Yep.
And the options for Sil Nylon tarps these days,
they're endless.
Yeah, they're endless. And there's a lot of cheaper options too. And then, like, even mid-range ones, like, there's the ultralight ones where it's like light as a feather. But at the same time, even the heavier ones aren't even anywhere close to heavy.
We have a I think we talked about this on one of the last episodes where I told you the mouse damage that tarp.
Yeah.
It was a DD Hammocks tarp. And it's mm-hmm. a 4 meter by 4 meter. That's huge. The thing weighed less than a pound.
Yeah.
That's one of the heaviest, biggest Sil Nylon tarps I've ever handled. And it was mm-hmm. still under a pound.
Yeah.
There you go. And again, talking about price range, 20 years ago, Sil Nylon tarps were up in the hundreds. Now you can get them for dirt cheap on Amazon and stuff. So everybody's dropped their prices to try and be mm-hmm. competitive. I think that DD Hammock tarp was $85 plus shipping from the UK.
Yeah.
Eagle Nest Outfitters, all the camp, a lot of different brands make Seal Nylon tarps. Woods is making them at for like $50 or less. And there's ones that are 10 by 10s or 10 by 12s or 10 by 13s, I think, actually, at Canadian Tire and other places that sell Woods brand products.
Yeah.
Which is great because that price point, I've in the past, when I've had the budget, I've gone and bought five of them just to have a bunch of them at camp. And it cost me $250 to supply the entire camp with five big tarps. Why not?
Yeah.
So I think that's a great direction for shelter, 100%. And it teaches them how to tie their knots. It teaches them how to set up shelter in different situations. They can make it in and configure tarp in a bunch of different ways.
Yeah.
Make a burrito if they're just going to be cold, but they know there's no wind or rain coming. Whatever it needs to be. It's a great choice on your list there.
Especially since when I started off, I was using just your typical poly tarp. And it would take up half my day pack.
Yeah.
Like, you can never get it folded nice and tight as you did when it became factory folded and everything. So, even that's an option, too, if you really want to. If you want to, like, get them as much as possible here and you want to just get a small poly tarp.
Yep.
So be it. I've found them at the dollar store before for a little 8x5 or something like that.
Something like that. And you can always teach them how to do with a wool blanket, a bedroll, and just carry that instead of having it in the pack kind of thing.
Very nice and simple. So, yeah. And then also a hank of 550 paracord.
Totally.
You can find pretty good size rolls of paracord these days.
Almost anywhere.
For like $10-$20. So you get them that and a tarp and a couple other little things, you're still looking under $100. 100%. And if you're looking under $200, you could get like half the stuff on this list. So
pretty much.
Yeah, depending on, you'll have to make some sacrifices in like the quality of certain things, but at the same time, there's a lot of ways you can really package this up to like give them a good start. And then, where was I again?
Putting all together in the price points and stuff.
You can really configure something to get them started, and then if they cut grass and wash cars and sell lemonade over the summer, then
shovel
they can
some snow,
get some more money towards what they want to get next. So,
100%.
And even for the adults too, we know times are tight, rent is at an all-time high.
Yep.
So yeah, you might want to cut some corners and spend as little as possible. So. But now that we've got all the really factory-made stuff out of the way, there's also things like carved spoons and cookses.
Yeah.
People who really like the whole rustic feel of everything. They don't necessarily want all the titanium and stainless steel. You can still get carved spoons out there. I know cookses have become increasingly popular over the last few years. And there are more mass-produced options of that, but then there's more really artistic options. Guys like John and Raddick
100%.
Make them all the time. They have people who commission them to make them cookses and spoons. John's always around at every little craft show and gathering in the area.
Raddick's doing that too now.
With his spoons. So, yeah, they're always around. You can get them for a $15 spoon, but it has a story. They pick the right wood. They pick stuff with some character on it, too. And it just kind of adds to the outdoorsy feel of it. You don't feel like you're carrying around your kitchen with you.
100%.
So, and there's just something about a cook's drinking coffee out of it by the fire. That's where you feel like you're a bush person at that point.
Definitely. And you can check those guys out and many other carvers on places like Instagram and stuff and Etsy as well.
Yeah,
you can find some pretty good stuff on there. Those are great directions to go with.
Yeah, I find Etsy to be the place for the crafters.
Yeah, 100%.
For the woodworkers, for the blacksmiths. Anything you want to find with a little extra character on it, I find Etsy is always a pretty good place to look.
That's where I ended up getting that carving axe of mine. And all of our blacksmithing equipment's come from Etsy as well.
All right. So that kind of, I think, rounds it off for a list of basics. Like I said, we're not filling your whole car with equipment here. These are some nice options to get people started. You can get as little or as much as you want for that person in your life mm-hmm. that's looking for this sort of thing. But yeah, stuff like a saw, a knife, and an axe, get them all together for $100. Or if they want need more kitchen equipment, they want a water filter, or a pot set, and a stove, you can still get that for $100 to $150 sort mm-hmm. of deal. So yeah, depending on what your budget is, there's a ton of options, ton of ideas how you can configure it for that person in your life. But for the more advanced person in your life that has been doing this for years and years, like Caleb said earlier, it's more difficult to shop for them because they're going to be a little more particular with what mm-hmm. they want. This is not the starting point where they're like, I'll work with this for a while and then I'll see what I want after. They might have in mind that they've wanted that Grand Sforz Brook axe mm-hmm. for the last decade
yeah.
or so. And so get them a gift card.
Totally. We were checking into this just the other day. Canada Door Equipment Co.
Yeah.
here in Ontario, Canada, has gift cards you can buy online. And you can just give that to them. I'm sure Bushcraft Canada over in British Columbia does the same thing. Most online camping stores or bushcraft stores have gift cards. Mm-hmm. It's a great option to go with. And honestly, yeah. it's what I prefer. A lot of my in-laws complain every year that all I want is socks and gift cards to Lee Valley. Mm-hmm. That's all I ever ask for from anybody. If anybody wants to buy me presents, that's what I ask yeah. for.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think even Lore of the North is doing gift certificates.
I think so.
And stuff recently, I was looking since they just relaunched their web store.
Oh, yeah, Lure of the North Outfitters.
Lure of the North Outfitters is out there now. Now, Kylan and Dave, they have so much on their plates with mm-hmm. their guiding service and all the courses that they're offering
yeah.
that they just couldn't stay on top of also running a retail store.
Yeah, for all their kits and stuff.
Understandably,
yeah.
with all the stuff they did. But that was the way I first found out about them mm-hmm. was about their kits for their anoraks mm-hmm. and snowshoes and everything. But yeah, so now I'm not sure what their names are, but there's a lovely couple from Sudbury running their shop yep. now. So they still have all the same old stuff, all the wood stoves and wood stove bags and toboggan kits and everything, and DIY anorak kits. So you can check those out too. And they have certificates.
Great options.
Or else you can be like, hey, what do you want from here sort of thing.
Totally.
You don't always have to give them, here you go, $200, spend it as you will, and be like, okay, this is what our budget is, what do you want sort of thing.
Totally.
So... other than that, like we've always said, we're huge
proponents
of knowledge.
Totally.
And not always just running out and buying all the tools.
Mm-hmm.
But I think books are the best way to really narrow down what it is you're looking for.
Yes.
We all love reading through Morse's books.
Yes.
Just all the stuff that he puts in there and really narrows it down, because you don't know what you want at first. You might see what the best marketed item is first, mm-hmm. but looking, okay, you want a blade of this size and you want it to be able to do this. Yeah.
You're actually able to do this for you. Yada, yada.
So yeah, guys like Morris Kahansky, Ray Mears, Lars Falt, Bruce Zawalski.
Yes. Bruce Zawalski.
Friend of the show.
Yeah.
And then also Kevin Callan, if you're more on the adventure side of thing, if you're looking for canoe routes to go out and test these things out,
mm-hmm.
then Kevin Callan's the guy, at least
he's got
north of Ontario, Canada. Yeah.
He's got a great winter camping book.
Yep.
Like so many different camping subjects. He's got a cookbook,
I think. He's got the Happy Camper series as well. So that's a lot of stuff. He was my tripping teacher. So I learned a lot of my stuff from Kevin.
Awesome.
So yeah, just everything from gear selection, the route selection, everything camping, that stuff to you. Lars, I loved his winter camping book that I bought a year or two ago. It has a ton of stuff in mm-hmm. there. It's a little more aimed towards Scandinavian adventure, but if you're
sure.
in Sweden, Finland, or Norway and here, and
yeah.
you and wanna...
And a lot of that is transferable to Northern Canada.
Yeah.
So it makes a lot of sense. I've loved his yeah. books, not just because I'm in them.
Yeah.
another book that you, if the youth that you're working with or the person you're trying to buy for is really survival skills oriented, I would also recommend The Psychology of Wilderness Survival by Dr. Gino Ferry. Gino Ferry wrote an amazing book. It's, I think it's like 20th edition now or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, very detailed book on survival skills and prepping your mind for survival situations. So it's a great book as well. It's a mom and pop publisher in Ontario. You got to order it from their website, survivalinthebushinc.com.
Yeah. And even if they're trying to get more into winter camping, there's stuff like the Snowwalker's Companion.
Yeah, yeah.
The name of the author slips me at the moment. I had just
remembered. Starts with the C. I know that.
Conover or something, I think is her last name. But yeah, I was just recommended this book to someone today to go get it from Canadian Outdoor Equipment. But yeah, that's where you can find it. It's like $23
there. They sell Lars's books. They sell Ray's books.
Yeah.
Kevin's books, everything.
Tim's got everything you need.
He really does. Tim Foley. My dear friend Tim Foley. Hello, Tim. I don't even know if you're listening to this podcast, but I love you anyways.
So yeah, beyond the books out there, there's merino wool socks, base layer toque, any kind of wool.
Yeah.
Base layer socks, toque. I think anybody of any experience would appreciate that.
You can never run out of wool.
It's like as a kid, you hated getting socks and underwear for Christmas, but as you get into an adult and you're wearing those same boxer briefs that you've had for 2 years and they've got 5 holes in them.
You're trying to aim yourself when you wear them so the hole's not going to chafe. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, just things like that, I think they would always be appreciated.
Definitely.
I have too many socks, but whenever I'm looking to pack them, I can only find a quarter of them.
Yeah.
So if I have a whole drawer just full of wool socks, I think I'd be set with that.
You feel rich when you see that drawer. Mm-hmm.
And a great place to look for these things are thrift shops.
Yes.
Depending where you are, it could be a gold mine. If there's, like, in Peterborough, it's a little more difficult. You got a little more of an outdoorsy crowd in Peterborough with the Trent University students who are Fleming a little students. Thrifty. And everyone knows to check the thrift shops in the area. For old wool sweaters, pants, blankets, anything you can find. You can even find lots of fleece there, too. Yep. Yeah, so I think stuff like that will always be a bit of a thing.
Army surplus can be another option if you're looking for winter clothes or just tough clothes. They're not always the lightest clothing to wear, but they can be quite tough.
Mm-hmm. And even if you're not in the hunting shops often have a lot of good options for camping and adventure equipment too.
Definitely.
Like the guns and everything are like the main part of their whole
industry,
but at the same time
they'll carry some good hunting clothes.
They got a lot of camping and hunting clothes and everything. Yep.
And you can go small mom and pop shop for that, or you can go to something like Cabela's or Bass Pro, and you'll find I think the Redhead socks that are Bass Pro specifically owned.
Yeah.
They're lifetime warrantied. So if you get a hole in your Redheads, you can take them back to Bass Pro and get basically a brand new pair.
Same with Darn Tough.
Yep, Darn Tough is a great option too.
Yeah.
They actually challenge you to wear out their socks. They want you to wear out their socks.
I have to find my pair of Darn Tough. I had one, and again, it's gone into the abyss. I think it was stolen by the dryer. But
I still like that George Carlin, when you get to heaven, you get all your stuff back that went missing. That's what heaven really is. You get there and you'll find that pile of Darn Tough socks that you kept buying and losing in the dryer.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, you can look anywhere. Canadian Outdoor Equipment, military surplus, thrift shops, big box stores like Mech or Sale.
Yep.
Specifically regionally here in Ontario. Mech's all across Canada, Sale.
Mm-hmm.
It's around Ontario, Quebec, and I think they might have some out west as well, but
you got,
it's a Quebec store.
You got REI down in the States, great store for a lot of different gear.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of different places.
Yeah, and then obviously they'll all have gift certificates as well.
And exactly. Cards and everything. Exactly.
So yeah, I think we've kind of beat this one dead for now.
I think the last thing I would add onto that list, going to the gift certificate category, is but tying into the knowledge category, is experiences.
Yeah.
Get them a gift certificate or get them a registration for a carving class. Mm-hmm. Or with us, our bushcraft courses, depending on where you are in the world, there's bound to be a outdoor school nearby you somewhere.
Yeah.
So registering for them for a basic survival course or basic bushcraft course or camping course is another great direction to go in.
Even the social aspect of it. they go from doing it on their own. They don't know anybody that does this sort of thing. I get that a lot from people, is that there was no one in my area to do this with before, and I didn't really have many friends who were into it. All my friends were like, you're going to the bush for a few days? Why would you do that? I will be at home here watching Netflix. And don't get me wrong, I love me some Netflix, but I also love me the outdoors.
So, 100%.
So yeah, it's a nice opportunity to meet some like-minded people, and maybe that could form some lifelong friendships. So
totally.
Courses are always great. I've kept in touch from people from
many classes.
At least half of the classes I've even taught and everything. And I always gain a little friend off the side.
Totally.
Yeah, it's
excellent. This was an amazing list, dude. Like, right off the top. Like, this
I did feel like I was rambling a little bit.
No, this is great. This is great. I'm happy with this. This is a great episode.
Yeah. It's at least a nice little starting spot. I do want to do some more lists of more advanced gear. I have got people asking us for some more advanced winter equipment and all that kind of stuff. They like where we started with some of those episodes, but... So yeah, we'll
definitely be jumping on those.
Again, giving a little more, because a lot of these lists so far, we've started with the basics, and now we'll work our way up to some more
definitely
of the niche items.
Y'all have gotten the 101. Now we're ready to do 102. So that's what we're getting at with that. So with all that said, thank you so much for putting this all together, Ryan. This has been great.
No problem.
Appreciate this a lot, man. And to all you folks, we appreciate you too. Thank you for tuning in today. For this episode of the Canadian Bushcraft Podcast, to all our amazing supporters, you keep us moving forward. We've said this enough times before, but we're getting into the holiday cheer now, so I got to be a little bit more sucky and sappy and all lovey-dovey to all of you, because you keep us moving. You keep this inspiration going for us. And hopefully you've been enjoying the podcast. If you want to help support the podcast, it can be as little as a coffee a month, or you can go higher for different kickbacks and tiers if you go over to patreon.com/Canadian Bushcraft.
Just today, I promised everyone that joined the Patreon a baby goat. So,
oh no,
you're not on Instagram right now. But
oh no, oh, we need to get goats.
I saw a meme that said, "When I get rich, I'm gonna remember everyone that liked my posts, and I'm gonna buy them a baby goat." So now I've had dozens of people commenting and liking that, and they're like, "Yes. Yay.
Getting a baby goat."
I'm like, oh no. So yeah.
We gotta start farming goats now, is what you're telling me?
Yeah.
I'm working on the ducks, man.
Except for Quinn. They want a sheep because they've had some goat horror stories from their friends with their homesteads and everything.
So. Quinn, I love you, but I can't get you a sheep right now. I can't even get me a sheep right now. I love all of you. Go over to patreon.com/Canadian Bushcraft. You can get a lot more kickbacks over there. Articles, posts, videos that we've shown nobody else.
Baby goats.
Oh, God. We're working on the coins still, let alone the baby goats. Thank you all for tuning in. Happy holidays. We'll see you on the next episode of the Canadian Bushcraft Podcast. Take care.